Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CBT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Child Anxiety Fact Podcast. My name is Dawn Friedman, and I'm the owner of Child Anxiety Support, a membership for parents of anxious kids. I have my master's in clinical counseling and additional postgraduate training in child anxiety disorders, including exposure and response prevention and the Supportive Parenting for Anxious Childhood Emotions Program, or SPACE program, which was designed by Dr. Ellie Lebowitz of the Yale Child Study Center. I'm also certified in infant toddler mental health. FAQ stands for Frequently Asked Questions, and each week I'll be answering your questions about childhood and teen anxiety. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I realized as I was going on a run, I do a lot of my podcast thinking when I'm walking back from my run, as I mentioned last week, and today's run was a super easy slow run. I had a nice long walk back through the woods, and originally I tried to record my podcast out there walking back after my run, but the sound quality was way too bad. So I decided to come back home and record part two of the last podcast. Now, the last podcast, if you remember, was about validation and why it doesn't work in anxiety. And I realized I forgot to tell you a really important part about validation. And to do this, I'm going to use two things that happened to my son. I got his permission to do this. I texted him while I was walking back on the path and said, "Can I please share some of your trauma for my podcast listeners?" And he said, "My trauma is yours to give." And so I'm giving it. Again, this is to illustrate why validation doesn't work and what we need to do around validation. This first story that I'm going to tell you about my son, I can't remember if he had just turned two or was about to turn three, but he was very, very little. And we were at a park with a soccer field. He was running around the park. We were trying to wear him out, probably after lunch, just before nap, so he would take a nice long sleep. Anyway, he's running around, and his dad and I are sitting at one end of the soccer field talking, probably about him, because when he was that little, that was pretty much all we talked about. We were a little bit obsessed with parenting, and we were pretty high-intensity new parents. I know many of you share that quality with me, as evidenced by the fact that you're listening to this podcast. Anyway, it was fairly windy, and at some point, I had a feeling something was wrong. Noah had been running around at the other end of the field, and I looked up, and he was standing in the soccer goal, kind of far away, but I could see that he was crying. I couldn't hear him crying because of the wind, but I could see that he was crying, and I got up, and I started running down the soccer field. It was like one of those dreams. Oh, no, I can't get to my kid. It's like running through quicksand. I couldn't get to him fast enough, and I didn't know what was wrong, just that he was standing there with his head up and his mouth open in a big, wide wail, like on Charlie Brown, you know, with this big, upside-down, sad mouth. But I finally get to him, and what had happened is he had run into the soccer goal from the other direction and gotten caught in the net and didn't realize, because he was very little, that he could just turn around and get back out. So he thought he was trapped there, and all I could think is him being trapped in this net and looking at us just laughing, just having a good time, and how that must have felt for him, that maybe he felt trapped forever. Now, validation didn't mean telling him that or agreeing with him if he did feel trapped forever. It didn't mean saying, "Oh my gosh, you were trapped forever, you were in such grave danger, but I rescued you." Validation was saying, "It may have felt like that, but you were always okay. It may have felt like I had abandoned you, But I hadn't, because I came to you. You were always safe. I was always here. There was always a way out of the net. You're very little, so you didn't know these things, but I know them for you, and I will share them with you so you can learn them too. Do you see the difference in this kind of validation? It doesn't mean agreeing with them, joining them in their struggle, in the struggle with them. Having empathy doesn't mean that we join them in their fear. It doesn't mean joining them in their perception of reality. It means bringing them actual reality. Not the reality they perceive, but the reality that is true. Not that you were trapped in a net, but that you felt trapped in a net. But look, this is how you get out of the net. I'm going to give you another example. Again, this is Noah, and he was older, but I'm not sure how old he was. I can't remember whether or not his sister had arrived, but I want to say he was about 5, so probably still an only child. We used to go to a friend's house every year for the 4th of July. She had a fabulous 4th of July party every year, and she had kids too, with a really kid-friendly backyard. You could kind of let the kids run wild and know that everybody was pretty safe. We used to go to that 4th of July party every year, and this one year, and as I said, Noah was, he was around 5 or 6, but he was old enough that he was no longer one of the youngest kids at the party, and he could kind of run in this gang of 5-ish-year-old kids, and they were sort of following the 7- and 8-year-old kids around. And we could hang back and hang out with the grown-ups and know that everybody was pretty much okay. And it was a fenced-in yard. And again, lots of toys, lots of good things to do. Super child-friendly. So they had a great treehouse in this backyard, and Noah loved this treehouse. And at one point during the party, I look up and he's peeking out of the window, and he looks so cute that I actually took a picture with my digital camera. So sweet, him up there. And I wave to him, and he doesn't really wave back. And we continue on with the party, and eventually we walk to the fireworks, and then we go home, and that's the end of it. It was some time before we actually printed out the digital pictures and put them in the album, and it was several years, I mean years, before we were going through the album together. When Noah gets to that picture, and by then I know his sister is around, so he's 8 or 9, so it's been a long time. Anyway, we're looking through the albums, and he says, "Oh, I'm glad to see you got a picture of my terror." And I said, "What are you talking about? You weren't afraid of heights. You loved that treehouse." And he said, "Yeah, but the kid," and I'm not going to say this kid's name, but we'll call him Bully, because he was kind of a bully, right? I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Well, it turns out the kid who lived in the house, this older kid, the one that we're going to call Bully," he said, "Yeah, Bully had me trapped up there. He told me he wasn't going to let me come down. I was terrified. And I was looking out at all of you grown-ups laughing, and nobody knew how terrified I was. And then you took a picture of it. I was afraid to tell you because Bully told me that if I told the parents, I would be in trouble." And I thought, oh my gosh. So that's what he was thinking this whole time. It was like the soccer goal all over again. But the reason I'm telling you this is that at 2 times, I failed my kid. I failed my trapped kid. One time I was aware of it, and I was able to validate and talk him through it and comfort him. And the second time, I had no idea. No idea for years. And yet, my son does not go through life feeling abandoned and afraid. He's an adult now, and as far as I can tell, he does not seem to worry about getting trapped and not rescued. In fact, his hobby is climbing. He's a climber. He goes up on cliffs. He does camping. He does things that if you were truly afraid of getting trapped, you probably wouldn't do. And the reason he doesn't feel that way is because he is a resilient human. And because most of the time, we got it right. Most of the time, we didn't just leave him trapped. We were there to help him. Those times that we were able to do it carried him through the times we weren't able to do it. So the first time I was able to validate him, and the second time I wasn't, but he had internalized some of that validation. He was able to process it himself. Now, I didn't become obsessed with the ways that I failed him. When he told me this the second time, it was kind of like the first time, where I said, "Wow, that must have been really scary." And then we talked about how Bully was a bully and what he could have done and what he couldn't have done. You know, we processed it. And I said, "I was sorry. I said, I didn't know. I said, if I'd known, I would have gotten you out of that treehouse." My point is, that I know when you're in the middle of the crisis, which is parenting a child with anxiety, that it's very easy to feel inadequate. When your kid feels terrible, when your kid is really struggling emotionally, it feels like you're not doing enough. The reason I'm thinking about this situation in particular, about the treehouse, about the net, one is because sometimes it's easy to get stuck in our failures. It's easy to feel like our parenting is the sum of the times we didn't do it right. But when I think about those times with my son, who's now grown, I do remember that for a long time I felt guilty about that soccer goal. It was something I had to process. I was still a new enough parent to really get down on myself, to not realize that high standards didn't serve me well, that I needed to create realistic standards so that I could be a happy parent, as well as a good enough parent. I think about if I had carried that through our parenting, that guilt, and if I had carried it into the treehouse, and when Noah had told me about it, if I had gotten stuck in the guilt of this idea that I had failed him, if I overvalidated, if I really insisted that he had feelings of abandonment and that these feelings of abandonment needed to still be part of our relationship, if I had projected that. And again, he may have felt abandoned in both of those situations, but the facts were he was not abandoned. The facts were he has loving, involved parents. We were loving, involved parents when he was little and caught in a soccer net. And we were actually loving, involved parents when he was stuck in the treehouse. Do you see how I could have made things worse? If I had said to him, "You must have felt like nobody ever cared. You must have wondered, how can my mother not understand me? How could she have abandoned me?" That wouldn't have served him, and it wouldn't have served our relationship. I can both know that in the moment he was suffering and struggling, and at the same time acknowledge his resiliency. We don't need to keep revisiting it as a failure. It's just those things happen in parenting. Sometimes we're the last person to pick our kid up from daycare, and we feel guilty when we see them alone or if they burst into tears when we find them. We can feel guilty because maybe we forgot to pick them up on a certain day, or maybe we thought they were behind us and instead they got lost in the department store. These things happen. They're part of being a parent. When we have anxious children, they may light on these kinds of incidents and talk about, "This is proof that things do not go well for me." And instead, we can validate, "Yeah, it was a tough thing." And we can also help them move through it. Just as we showed our son, "Actually, you could turn around. You can get out of the net this way." We can say to them, "It felt like that. But what really happened? What really happened is we came and got you. What really happened is we came and found you. What really happened is we finally were able to hug and celebrate that we were together again." We need to know that we are good enough parents. We need to convey that to our children and to let them know that we believe they are kids who can survive things like being trapped in soccer nets, like feeling abandoned in a treehouse and dealing with bullies and all the many challenges that our children will have to face, that people will have to face. I think for some of us who were children who didn't get our feelings acknowledged and addressed, that we tend to over-acknowledge and over-address because we're so afraid of our child feeling belittled or not heard. I'm thinking about those of us who maybe had parents who said, "You're just too sensitive. Stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about." And so we overcompensate. But again, our child is allowed to have their experience and we can believe them. We can believe they're having their experience. But at the same time, we can point out to them there was another reality. So we can say, "It must have been really scary to be trapped in that treehouse, and I'm so glad you got out, however that happened." We can say, "I'm glad you learned how to get away from a bully. I'm so glad that you figured out that person wasn't a good friend. But that's you. You're resilient. You can handle things. Even the screw-ups of me, your loving mother, because you're fantastic. You're someone who can handle it." I think about the many parents I've talked to who feel so much guilt for something that they did or didn't do as a parent, and they really want their child's forgiveness about it. And it's kind of like an anxious child coming to a parent for reassurance. Sometimes the parent is coming for reassurance. they're saying to their child, "Is it okay? I'm so sorry. Can you forgive me?" But what that tells a child is, "I can't be trusted. You can't count on me. I am someone who is so insecure and so shaky that I need to lean on you." We need to build our own confidence. The reason why child anxiety support focuses so much on the parents is not just that that's what the research tells us needs to happen, but also because I strongly believe that as we process our own experience of anxiety, including our anxiety over our anxious kids, the stronger we become and the better supports we can offer our own kids. So as we grow in confidence as parents, as we learn to focus on our strengths, as we learn to forgive ourselves for our inevitable mistakes, so we become better parents. The more we trust ourselves as parents, the more trustworthy we are as parents. If you have any questions, if you have any thoughts, if you're not clear on what I'm saying here and want some feedback about a particular situation of your own, please reach out to me and let's talk about it. I want you to know that I believe in you too. I believe that you can find your way out of a soccer net. I'm happy to give you some direction if there's anything I can do to make your path easier. But I have faith in you, and I have faith in your child. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. If you have a question you would like me to answer on the show, please go to childanxietysupport.com/FAQ. And if you'd like to learn more about the Child Anxiety Support membership, please go to childanxietysupport.com. The membership offers courses, live events, and community to help you design a personalized program to free your family from the trap of child anxiety. I hope you'll consider subscribing to the podcast and sharing it with any friends or family who you think might find it helpful. You can get more of my child anxiety content over at Instagram, where I'm Dawn Friedman, MSED, or on Facebook at the Child Anxiety Support page. Thanks again, and have a great week.